So we're really, really excited about this. This is the very first time that we're ever doing this podcast live in front of an audience, which is really, really exciting. So it's going to be a special episode in many different senses, and not only because we actually have to wear pants this time, but in many other senses as well. So my name is John Sundell. I'm an iOS developer, freelancer. I do blogging, podcasting, obviously, and a bunch of other things. And I'm here today with my good friend, like you saw before, giving his great talk about spelunking, Mr. Guy Rambeau. How are you, Guy?
Hi, John. I'm great. Thanks for introducing me.
Yeah, well, my pleasure.
So I am an iOS developer from Brazil. And as you've seen in my talk, I like to do reverse engineering as well. And our podcast has a lot to do with that. We use the word spelunking a lot.
We do. And I think a good place to start would be just to introduce the show a little bit, because I know some people who are in the audience today might not know the show since before. So first of all, our show is all about discussing Apple news and rumors, but from a developer's perspective, because there's so many great podcasts out there talking about Apple and what's going on with the tech industry, but they don't really go into technical details, and we really love to nerd out about these things, don't we?
Oh yeah, we love all the nitty-gritty details. I don't think we're going to see much of that today because we didn't have time to investigate, but we definitely have thoughts.
Well, I can tell you that we watched the Apple event together, me and Rambeau, yesterday, and it literally took like 2 minutes after the keynote ended, and he was already starting to take it apart, disassembling it, and you know, trying to figure out all the secrets.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Paul again, because he downloaded the Xcode GM, and I told him, hey, please download the IPSW for iPhone X of the GM. And he did it, so it helped me. So I found some code names there, nothing too exciting, but yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have some tidbits throughout the show about some early findings, but there will be more in the coming episodes for sure. So today we want to talk about the Apple event, of course, that was yesterday, a little bit about our reactions to it, and also just dive into some of the details and talk about maybe also a little bit what wasn't there, because a lot of people had expectations about this event like any other. And yeah, it's unclear whether our expectations were fulfilled or not.
Not.
All right, so before we begin with that, before the event even started, thanks to someone I know, we knew quite a few things, didn't we? Rambeau, why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I mentioned yesterday the phrase, stop me if you've seen this, because I think Steve used that in the iPhone 4 keynote. For
right.
Those of you who don't remember, iPhone 4 was the one who an Apple engineer something forgot in a bar, and someone found it and sold it to Gizmodo. So it was a fun story. So 9 to 5 Mac, the site I write for, we published marketing images of iPhone XS and the Apple Watch Series 4. It was like 2 weeks for the event.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that.
There's that. So now the world got to see the images without the 9 to 5 Mac watermark on top of it.
Exactly. They got to see them a few days early because I tweeted the story about how I found them. And I included the images without the watermark. And fun fact, that was while I was over the Atlantic flying here.
Yeah, that's cool because you had Wi-Fi on the plane, right?
Yeah, satellite networking.
Yeah, technology. What a wonderful thing.
Awesome.
So tell us a little bit about that. Like, a lot of people were speculating, and for me, this was really, really funny, because Rambeau told me, you know, privately, how he found these things. Like, you told me about the name that you knew that the new iPhone Max was going to have. That was bleeped out on our last episode, so we can finally unbleep that. But it was really funny for me, because for the first time, I could listen to all these other podcasts and blogs and everything speculate, but kind of knowing the answer already. And I was texting Rambeau about this, like, you have no idea how funny this is to me. But then as soon as I sent that text, I realized he does actually know, because that's like how it is for you all the time.
Yeah, so that was another thing. If you listened to our last episode, at the end, we added an Easter egg. where we were talking before we started recording, and I told John about the name, which I knew from a little birdie, so I couldn't actually say it in public. By the way, 95 Mac posted about the names, I think, a few days before the keynote, and I didn't have anything to do with that. They had their own sources. So I told John, and his reaction was so cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I was very shocked. Like we'll discuss in more details in just a second. But tell everybody, like, how did you actually find these marketing images? Because a lot of people were speculating about it.
So Apple has been using the same structure for their event pages on their website since, I don't know, since 2015 or something. So it's very consistent, which is good. It's a familiar UI and structure. So what they do for each Apple event is a few days before, like a week before, they launch a website, separate page on their website for the event. And it's like apple.com/apple-events/September-2018. So this was the URL for the current event. And what I did was I was observing that URL because I have a tool that I run that will like poll the URL. And when it returns 200, it gives me a notification.
Does it say bingo?
Exactly. Boom. It says boom.
Nice.
So I had that. So I knew immediately when they... actually, not immediately, because I went out to have lunch. And it was during my lunch break that they released the website. And
quick, run home.
Yeah, so I was working from home at the day, so I was already home. So I had my burger and went back to my computer. Oh, they released it. So if you visit their website right now, you're probably going to notice at the bottom below the video, they have a recap section with pictures of what they released. So what I did, and I totally, this was like, there's no way this is going to work. They wouldn't do this. It's too stupid. It's too naive. This will never work. But hey, let's try it. Why not? It's easy. So I opened the page from the March event. So this mm-hmm. year's event. Actually, not. It was the last year's September event. So it was, instead of September 2018, it was September 2017. You know, same structure since forever.
That's why we shouldn't use consistent naming, right?
Yeah. So I noticed the recap section. I grabbed the URL for like the iPhone image, and it was like apple.com, Apple events, September 2017 /iPhone X /image-large2x.png or something. So I had a pretty good idea that the name of the new iPhone would be iPhone XS, spelled XS. So I just added an S to and then I pressed enter and I waited for the 404 to appear, and a picture appeared of gold iPhones. So yeah, that's how it happened. And then I had a mini heart attack. And after that, I went to the 9to5 Mac Slack channel. And
then they all had heart attacks as well.
Yeah, and then I said, guys, I have the iPhone XS picture. And they were like, are you serious? And then I pasted the URL, and then I told them, while I'm writing the post, you guys start trying out like every possible combination that could lead to another product. And they found I think it was Zach who found the watch, which was just /watch/. So it didn't have Series 4 in there. So yeah, it was changing one character in the URL.
Yeah, it's like the one place where Apple shouldn't use consistent naming, right?
Exactly.
Where, you know, in their singleton APIs, it's not consistent naming, but in their marketing images, it's very consistent.
Yeah, the lesson to take from here for Apple, if you're listening, is maybe then they send an undercover investigator to NS Spain. Who knows? The lesson is that these shouldn't have been there to begin with. Like they could have the files on the server, but they should have added like an htaccess file to prevent access or something like that. But yeah, ideally, they wouldn't even be there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so this was super interesting. And I also love how, you know, I was reading some of these stories and they were like, Guy Rambo, the elaborate hacker who hacked into Apple and got these images, and you literally just added an S to the URL.
Yeah, this is something that like anyone could have found. It just happened to be me, but I wouldn't be surprised if like I didn't do it immediately after they did that. Like Steve Troughton-Smith or someone else would have found the images. In yeah. fact, we rushed to post as soon as possible because it was so easy. Like anyone could have found them.
Right. It was literally in plain sight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hiding in plain sight.
Exactly. All right. So now we want to talk more about what actually happened at the Apple event, not only what didn't happen or what happened before. But while we talk about these things, and we're also going to reveal our results of our poker game that we played, which we're playing with really high stakes here. We're playing about drinks. So the question is, who is going to pay for the drinks at Calle Laurel during the weekend, right? But while we talk about these things, those of you who are here in the audience, if you want to send us any questions, you can just tweet with the hashtag AskStackTrace and also include the hashtag NSSpain2018 if you want us to answer some specific questions later in the show. All right, so let's kick it off with talk about the Apple Watch, because that was the first product. There was a really funny intro video, which someone mapped out the path that this girl actually took, who was running with the briefcase with Tim Cook's clicker. And it turned out that Siri is just as consistent in this world as it is in the real world. Listen to her.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to be honest and represent how Siri works in real life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was. So someone actually took a map of Apple Park and drew the path that this girl made in the video, and it was like super inefficient. She could have gone like this, but she actually went like this.
And those for you listening now, Rambo is just making a little
I'm
line and then a long line.
Making squiggly lines with my hand in the air.
Yeah. All right, so about the Apple Watch Series 4, this, like we talked about on our last episode, for me is the big news. This is the product I'm most excited about. It is beautiful, and for me, putting all these complications, this extra information, this larger screen, it will probably make the Apple Watch, you know, super powered. So how do you feel about this product? Are you excited about it as well?
Yeah, I was looking at some pictures that Rene Ricci took yesterday at the hands-on area. And for some reason, it looks even more awesome in like real pictures. And in fact, follow-up from our last episode, someone sent us, I'm sorry, I don't have the name here, but someone actually sent us a link to a Verge article, I think from a couple of years ago, where they showed the process for making the marketing images.
Right.
And they are actually pictures.
Yeah, that is really, really impressive. Like, yeah, with all the lights, it really looks like renders.
Yeah, I really thought they were 3D renders, but they actually photograph.
Yeah, I guess except those when they show like all the different parts flying together in 3D.
Yeah,
you know, I guess
maybe
that's
stop
not
motion.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's beautiful, and I will get one, definitely. I really like how rounded it is. It's not round. I wouldn't like to have a round Apple Watch as much as many people do, apparently, but I like that it's a little more rounded, and it looks more refined. It looks like a fourth generation product.
Yeah. So one big change for the new Apple Watch is the larger screen with more complications on the watch face. And for me, this is really an interesting thing from a developer's perspective, because it's a product of Apple's decision-making when it comes to the watch face and how tightly it is controlled, because they wouldn't be able to do something like this if we could build custom watch faces, for example, or if we had a larger control over the watch face, because we would you know, the rendering would break, the complications that already existed would have been broken. But now, because the complication API is very limited and it's also very declarative, you're kind of just declaring what you want to show on the watch face, and then Apple is in control of the rendering, and the rendering is like at their discretion, which enables them to, you know, do things like this, like really this huge jump in how they are rendering the watch faces. So for me, this is kind of an interesting trade-off, and it kind of shows again as to why Apple have not yet enabled third-party developers to build watch faces.
Yeah, there are many issues involved with having third-party watch faces. I'd love to have them. I think everyone basically would love to have them, and maybe even make watch faces. But there's like the issue you mentioned, there's battery life issues, there's the issue of the watch faces are part of the Apple Watch brand, so
yeah,
they want to keep control of that. And there are actually some new developer APIs for the new Apple Watch, and they released for you and the audience, you can go look in the WWDC app and check. They have some new videos. I'm not sure if those are already on my WWDC app. I have to double check.
You might have some hacking to do tonight.
Yeah, I may have to update the server or something. So, but yeah, there are some new APIs. Paul mentioned yesterday that it was like one new API specific to the iPhone XS Max, and he didn't actually tell me what it was. I think it's a new what are they called, trade collections?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe it's a new like
a size class.
Yeah. A new size class. Maybe they have a different size class. I don't know. But yeah, there are some new APIs for us to check out, and you should do it as soon as the conference is over.
Yeah, and again, like the declarative nature of building apps for the Apple Watch, because even when you're building UIs, you are dealing with WK interface elements. You're not instantiating UI views directly. And this is something that's, you know, been going back and forth a lot in the community, is like, you know, can we please get real UI kit on the watch? And this, again, I think goes to show some of the strengths of this approach, even though it can be really frustrating as developers, but it's much, much easier to do a change like this without having to ask developers to, you know, update all their rendering code, you know, taking these edges into account, for example, using safe area insets. So it kind of, you know, makes sense now that we are seeing these like really fast turnarounds and new screen sizes on the Apple Watch.
Yeah, it's like Lego for UI.
Right.
So
yeah,
you just put those building blocks in there. There's something about, I saw Steven tweeted about a new API to render arbitrary images, I think. Mm-hmm. So it could potentially be better for give more flexibility to apps.
Yeah.
We'll have to actually check it out and use it to see if it's really that flexible.
Yeah. And you also got SpriteKit, for example, on the watch.
Yeah.
So that could also be an issue. Still need to look into kind of how you would deal with those rounded corners with the SpriteKit app. Yeah. If someone is using SpriteKit, I mean, SpriteKit on the watch is really cool. It's a really cool demo, but I don't know how many people actually use it.
Yeah, there are probably some apps that use it as a workaround, so they don't have UIKit. So to do arbitrary rendering, they use SpriteKit.
SpriteKit UIKit.
SpriteKit UIKit. Yeah.
There you go.
So I don't know how they deal with it, if they use safe areas or if they give you the rounded corners. I don't know. But what I know is that as with the iPhone X was, you have to build your app with the Xcode 10 and the watchOS 5 SDK for it to actually occupy the entire screen. Otherwise, it's going to be shrunk down. And I guess we're going to see many apps like that, because watchOS apps are really not updated very frequently.
Right, yeah. So is that it for the watch? Is there something else you think is interesting to kind of dive into?
Well, there's all the new heart stuff, which is really amazing.
It is. It is really, really impressive.
Yeah, I mentioned that it's like having a hospital on your wrist.
Yeah.
It's a new product category.
Yeah, for sure. Question is like how much we can do with those things as developers, right? Those things tend to be very locked down and only available for like the health app and things like this. I mean, we can obviously build our own custom workout apps, but do we think that like the EKG, like the heart monitoring things, is going to be available for us as developers?
As far as I know, not. They even like the hard sensor, you can't get like raw data. Apple usually doesn't like to give you raw access to sensors, but it would be really cool if I could like observe beats per minute and just right. get a callback.
You get like music matching your beats per minute.
Yeah, I'd love to do like one idea I had, and it's a free idea for everyone if you can figure out how to make it. I wanted to do like a game where you would watch videos on your iPhone and you couldn't get scared.
Oh, right. Because that's funny.
If you get scared, your beats per minute go up and you'd lose the game.
Right.
Like that. I wanted to do something like that, but it's not currently possible with public API.
So. Yeah, it's like when I play horror video games, usually my Apple Watch is like, congratulations, you completed a workout. And I'm like, I'm literally sitting in my couch. But
life
know,
hack.
I'll take the points. I'll take the rings. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a life hack for you right there.
Yeah.
So yeah, the EKG is very impressive.
It is.
And unfortunately, because it's a very... very sensitive thing. It's constrained by regulations. So I've seen some conflicting information about this, but from what I've seen, the EKG sensor will be present on every Apple Watch sold worldwide, but you won't be able to actually use it outside the US, at least initially.
So the complete sensor will be deactivated. Like,
yeah, it will be like a software block. Like they have that for other things. So yeah, you have to wait for. But at least it's like they can. They are probably working with regulators for other places as we speak. They just couldn't do it before because they didn't want it to leak. And
yeah.
I am surprised they managed to get the, what is it called?
The FDA. Yeah,
the FDA approval without it leaking, because those things are usually public, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm glad they got it. And I think they're probably working on getting it for other countries as well. But the low heart rate stuff, that's available worldwide, and it even backports to the other watches, at least the Series 3 watch.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's all also right. 64-bit, the new watch.
It's what?
64-bit.
Ah, cool.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so next up we want to talk about the iPhone, of course. And one thing also about the Apple Watch we should mention is just how much like faster it is, and they are making such huge strides and such huge improvements in their own silicon design. And now we have, on the watch, we have a dual-core computer on our wrist. And even more so now with the iPhone. So we have the iPhone XS. XS? XS? What is it?
It's the iPhone XS.
The iPhone XS. All right. You can take beautiful pictures of it playing tennis.
Yeah. Exactly.
And in the iPhone XS, we have the A12 Bionic, which it's, you know, again, a huge leap forward in terms of their own custom silicon and their own custom chips. And we've got like everything from like a new redesigned neural engine. We've got like lower power. We've got faster GPU. We got lots of these things. But it's still retaining the Bionic name. So they didn't do another like vanity name for the CPU. Do you think there's a reason for that?
I think the reason was they were trolling us, because we, yesterday at the speaker's house, like 10 minutes before the keynote, we started to speculate what the name would be of the new, and we came up with all sorts of a supersonic Blackbird, and what was the other one?
I don't know.
There were some really crazy ones. Intergalactic.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they announced Bionic. What?
The A12 Hyperdrive.
Yeah. So yeah, I was a little disappointed that they didn't come up with a name. Although with the naming this year, I guess it's better that they kept the name, because it could be something terrible.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, as long as Apple don't change the names right now, we're pretty happy.
Of course.
All right, so we've got the A12 Bionic, and the big news here, well, the CPU, the improvements there are mostly related to power savings. So we've got much lower power draw for the CPU, which will, you know, give us better battery life, which is great. But the big news is on the GPU side. And here we can see this is the second generation Apple-made GPU, and they are already 50% faster than the previous generation, and it's up to a 4-core GPU, which is, you know, pretty impressive.
Yeah, but the biggest improvement was with the neural engine.
That's true, yeah. So with the neural engine, we now have an 8-core design, and Core ML, according to Apple, runs 90% faster.
Yeah, and what was before it ran like 600 billion operations per second,
yeah.
And now it's like 7 trillion?
Yeah, something like that. It's just uncomprehensibly
much. Yeah, it's mind-blowing.
I think Apple, they're like chasing their number of operations per second with their market cap, right? So now the market cap is 1 trillion and the number of operations is 7 trillion. They're just trying to get there.
And the increase should follow their customer set.
There you go. Exactly. So this is a huge news for on-device machine learning, which, you know, a lot of people are getting into. You know, really, really, really big speed improvement. And do you think that this is going to make Core ML like more appealing for more companies and more apps?
I think the Core ML is still not very appealing to some companies, and I guess most companies, because companies these days, they really want to do that kind of stuff on the server.
Yeah.
Because they want the data, which is a problem if you're worried about privacy. It can be done in respecting your privacy, but it doesn't have to. And we still have an issue with the size of the models. Even though CoreML improved a lot on that area and CreateML helps a lot, but to be honest, like what big companies want to do with machine learning can't really be done with CreateML, I think, because it's more complex models, custom models. And those will not benefit from the improvements in model size. I was training a recommender for Chibi Studio, which I'm probably going to ship next year.
Yeah, and that's using CoreML, right?
Yeah, it's using TuriCreate and CoreML.
Right.
I was talking to the TuriCreate people before even the WWDC, so I got a help with how I wanted it to work on iOS, and they did a great job with the implementation. But model size is still an issue. Like, my first attempt was using all of the data points we had, and that was like I think 15 million data points, and the model size was ginormous. Like, it was, I don't know, 200 megabytes or something. And
yeah.
I just can't ship that.
Yeah, that's a big issue with on-device CoreML or on-device machine learning in general, is you have to ship the models with the app, right? And also, like, you can't really correlate between different users, which a lot of companies want to do. And we can talk about the privacy aspects of that, but from a kind of technical point of view or feature point of view, you very often want that. You like some form of crowdsourcing to be able to like correlate between users and not have the model like relearn every single time for every single user.
Yeah, in the case of Chibi Studio, it's interesting because we actually collect the usage data for each item, and it's anonymized, so we know that it was the same user who used several items to make a chibi. But we don't know who that person is. We don't know their iCloud details or something. But we do know, like, people who use this tend to also use this. So it's classic machine learning problem.
Right.
And so we do correlate between users in a sense, because we use data from all users to train a model that's going to be used. But then there's the issue, like, we can't update the model without updating the app.
Right, yeah, that's a big one.
Which for us is not really that big of a deal. It's not a model that has to be updated all the time. So I think the issue we're going to have the most is that brand new items we introduce will never be recommended at the beginning,
right,
because
yeah,
we don't have any data for them. And then there's the size issue. So what I've done is I removed a lot of data. So I decided to, like, let's only use the usage data for the last, I don't know, 90 days or something. So it reduced the size from like 10 million data points to, I don't know, 500,000 or something.
Yeah, that makes sense. So big news for everyone who's excited about machine learning, which I am as well. I'm just getting started kind of with machine learning.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Now that you're seeing these like really big performance gains, and, you know, Apple, they're really, really focused on this area with the neural engine, it's getting just more exciting. But switching gears a little bit and talking about the next feature of the iPhone XS is the dual SIM support, which we were speculating about that it might be something for the quote-unquote low-cost model, which is, you know, the one that is slightly less expensive than the top-end one. But it turns out that it's actually coming to the XS, and it's actually like the top-of-the-line phone is getting dual SIM support. And they're doing this clever thing in China, only in China for some reason, where you can put two SIM cards in the same SIM tray, but you can like put them right next to each other.
Back-to-back.
Back-to-back. And I thought that was such an Apple-like solution. Where most other manufacturers, they would make two different slots. But on the iPhone, there's just one slot. You can just put two SIM cards in there.
Yeah, and it proves that the leaked images were fake because there were some supposedly leaked images from this model of iPhone. So yeah, those were fake because they had two physical SIM trays and it's just one with them back to back. And for the other markets, they're going to support a physical SIM and an eSIM, right?
Right, exactly. And that's how you get the dual SIM cards. And yeah, this is a really interesting feature for Apple to actually focus on because it seems like kind of an edge case. But like we talked about on the show previously, this depends a lot on the market, right? And we're just going to have to see like how effective like the eSIM strategy will be if all the carriers will adopt it like all around the world.
Yeah, I guess the Apple Watch LTE support is tied to eSIM, right? Because it doesn't have a physical SIM.
Yeah.
So there's at least one carrier in Brazil supporting the Apple Watch, so I guess they'll support eSIM as well. I think it's cool. And you can like pick your plan in iOS, something like that.
Yeah, it's very elegant. Like, it's very. How you would probably design a system like this if it wasn't for the SIM card, which is really a relic of the past at this point. Like, the fact that we have to put a little microchip inside of our phones to be able to, you know, connect to a carrier, that seems like something that we could solve electronically, right?
Yeah,
which we can now with the eSIM.
I was showing to someone my wallet that I brought with me, and it has the SIM eject tool, and my SIM from Brazil taped to the inside of the wallet because I didn't want to risk losing it. So
nice.
I just took a piece of tape and I glued the SIM card to my wallet.
That's perfect.
Because I had to change the SIM card.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's an interesting feature. We'll see how it plays out, I guess. But one thing that is interesting is that one thing that wasn't announced in the keynote is that the new iPhones, they actually do wireless charging faster. So they have way faster wireless charging than the previous generation of iPhone X, but they didn't mention it. And, well, we have some speculations about that. I know you do. You are waiting for this mythical product that Apple seems to pretend it doesn't exist anymore. They've removed it from their websites. Now it just says the AirPods will be able to charge wireless in the future, but it's currently unavailable, so it doesn't mention this mythical product that we once dreamed about. So what's up with AirPower?
Yeah, so first of all, they didn't mention wireless charging at all on the keynote, which was interesting because, we are probably going to talk more about this, but the keynote yesterday was a bunch of rehashing stuff. So lots of things we already knew officially from Apple. I'm not talking about the leaks. So like talking about iOS features, watchOS features, which were announced at WWDC. But I guess since this event is more consumer-y, they wanted to explain stuff again. And they didn't mention wireless charging, which was also the thing that they could talk about. And my guess is that they didn't want to bring up wireless charging because it would remind people of AirPower, and they are
right.
Kind of embarrassed that they can't ship AirPower.
Yeah. At this point, it's questionable whether AirPower has actually been canceled or whether they just are prolonging like the development and, you know, further delaying it. But the fact that it's like completely gone from the website now, it kind of looks kind of, you know, it looks a little bit doomed.
My guess is that since people are questioning this now, and I know that the websites which have contact with Apple PR and stuff, even 9to5Mac and John Gruber, all the big websites, they are poking at Apple PR for them to say something about AirPower. And of course, the answer is we don't have anything to say about that. But that's because they haven't come up with an answer yet. So my guess is that they're probably going to issue like a memo to the press, or they're going to call some press or just like tell John Gruber or Rene Ricci and like, oh, we're sorry, we have to make sure it's perfect, so we are going to release it in 2019 or something.
Do you think there will be an Air Power roundtable?
I don't think it like deserves a roundtable for itself, but I think they're going to say something. They just don't have like it ready. They right. have to figure out what the story is going to be.
Yeah. So we were expecting a new, you know, S version or an upgraded version of the iPhone X, and that's what we got. And we can argue about the naming and the whole Max naming and things like that. But, you know, it's kind of following the same pattern. Now we have the talk cycle of the TikTok development cycle. We've got the upgraded version of the previous year's model, better camera, faster, you know, the kind of usual suspects. But then there's a new thing. And this is the iPhone XR, which... what does the R stand for? Like, what is R?
Refurbished?
Really?
Real iPhone, really?
Exactly. So this is a very interesting product from many different perspectives. So first of all, it also has the A12 chip inside of it. So it's just like with the iPhone 8 last year, it runs the same chip as the most high-end product. So it's not slower by any means. It's not like old components. And that's great for us as developers, because that just means that we're moving things forward. We don't have to keep supporting the old ones. We can take advantage of the faster CPUs and the better neural engine and things like that. But there's a couple of compromises in this phone, of course, to bring the price down a little bit. But the funny thing is that, so we were talking about like how will Apple actually pitch this? Because they wouldn't say, oh, it's like an iPhone X, but worse, right? They need to make it sound cool. And this phone, it has an LCD display. But LCD displays has been around forever, so they can't say that this is cool, except this is Apple we're talking about. So it's not an LCD display, it's a liquid retina display. And
we laughed so hard when they invented a new name for LCD just to make it sound cool.
Only Apple could do this.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I mean, they're right? Like it is liquid because it's a liquid crystal display. But, you know, it's just a really funny name and making this sound like maybe a little bit better than it is. But it is an interesting technical achievement as well, because cutting LCD displays this way with the rounded corners is not easy. LEDs are much better for this because they're more like isolated in terms of the pixels. And in this case, it seems like they're using some kind of masking technique to actually get those nice rounded corners and get the display to go edge to edge.
Yeah. One thing to note about the iPhone XR is that, first of all, the bezels are a little thicker. So it's not... as thin as the iPhone X or XS, and the roundness of the corners is slightly different as well. It's a little less round, but it's barely noticeable. But I took pictures of both of them yesterday and compared, and it's a little bit different. So if you are hard coding the roundness of the corners, it's probably not noticeable, but it's there. There's a difference.
Yeah, safe area insets is definitely the way to go.
Exactly, yeah.
Like if you have this if statement, which is like if iPhone 10, then the status bar is like 88 points, otherwise it's 64 points.
Don't do that, kids.
It's time to remove those if statements for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting, this product, because first of all, this is like something they are pitching as the mainstream alternative, right? It's the iPhone XS is what you're going to get if you want the most high power, you know, the most cool phone. But if you want the normal one, the mainstream one, you should get this one. But it's really large. Like it's as big as a Plus phone, or it's even bigger even. So how do you think this will work out?
I think physically it's not larger than I don't think it's even as large as a Plus phone, because there's the screen to body ratio, which is different. But yeah, I don't know how people are going to react to that. They are still offering the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 7, but those are, I know people who swear for the iPhone SE because of its size. And they actually stopped selling the iPhone SE and the iPhone X and the iPhone 6S, which they were still offering. So yeah. I don't know how the market's going to react to that.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because I know a lot of people who, they're not just looking to get a cheaper phone, they're looking to get a smaller phone. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you have big, you have really big, and you have like, well, kind of big.
Kind of big, yeah.
And Yeah, it's just an interesting choice, but I guess they have data to back this up, the fact that a lot of people want bigger phones, they want this larger screen, and also, like, just from a kind of a streamlining perspective, like, having all the phones have the notch, have the rounded corners, have Face ID, like, have very similar features, it makes a ton of sense, and it's also great for us when we are designing interfaces, because a lot of people, they are embracing the notch, and they are designing their UIs based on the rounded corners, based on the notch, and I know apps like Halide, for example, and I know Chibi Studio, you are putting data, putting small buttons and things up in the ears of the notch. And this is good news, because now, well, all the phones are going to have a notch. But it's just, like, really interesting, I think, the fact that this exists and the fact that this is a strategy, but it also makes sense from, like, a streamlining perspective.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I'm happy that they're doing it. And it makes sense even if you take into account their marketing talk from last year. They mentioned explicitly that this was their vision for iPhone for the next 10 years. So iPhone used to be this rounded rectangle with a home button. And now it's a rounded rectangle with a notch. So,
like the glyph you discovered.
Yeah.
There you go. Another interesting thing about the XR or the XR is the fact that it comes in colors. And this is something we've seen before in the iPhone 5C, which was also pitched as a lower cost device. So it almost seems like Apple is making the association with lower cost device equals colors, which I find kind of interesting because a lot of people want colors, right? But they might still want the best phone.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that. I guess stainless steel is harder to color, and I've heard that it is. Even gold is harder to do with stainless steel, and it might be one of the reasons why we didn't get an iPhone X in gold, because they couldn't figure out the manufacturing. And I really love the yellow one. I always want the yellow one.
Yeah, I think the red one, the coral one, as they call it, because of course they can't call it red. Well, there is actually a product red as well, but yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited for it, and I know this sounds like completely ridiculous, but I'm probably going to buy a yellow one as a test device, so I can look at it. When they released the iPhone 5C, I really wanted the yellow one, but I couldn't afford to have like two iPhones back then, but now I can, so I'm going to probably buy a yellow one.
You're just going to go into the Apple store. Can I have one of each, please?
No, not that much, but yeah, I really like the yellow one.
All right, that's really cool. So how do you feel about this lineup in general? So now we've got the XS, we got the XS Max, we've got the XR, all the XS everywhere. Do you think like customers will understand the difference? Do you think everyone will understand the difference? And do you feel like, you know, this lineup kind of makes sense?
It's going to require some explanation. It's okay in terms of like I think the sizes and the compromises make sense, but the dual SIM thing, the colors thing and the names thing, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, this thing is tricky, and you can see Apple, they're going to really like a lot of lengths in order to try to make like the visuals of these names make sense. So on the website, they are like they've always done, like they put the S in a little rounded rectangle, but also in the text, like when they're writing text, they are writing 10S, like a capital X. You think it might be lowercase s, but it's actually uppercase S, but it was smaller font.
This is like subscript.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got the same thing with the R as well, which looks nice, but you know a lot of people, they go just write, you know, X with a big X and then lowercase r, which I guess doesn't look as nice and maybe looks a little bit confusing, but that's just the way it's going
to
be.
Yeah, they could add to the emoji on the Mac and iOS, or maybe just a separate UTF-8 thing for the little S inside a rounded rectangle.
Yeah, there you go. So before we move on to our poker results and also to answer some of your questions from Ask Stacktrace, let's talk quickly about what we didn't see. So we didn't see new iPads, we didn't see new Macs, we didn't see AirPower like we talked about. So do you think there's going to be an additional Apple event later this fall, maybe in October, with iPads and Macs?
Totally, yeah. I would say it's very likely that we'll see an October event. And people seem surprised. I see people saying they will never do an October event. They have one in September. But they have always done an October event. Like, they do October events, and it was usually a smaller event at the One Infinite Loop town hall.
Yeah. In the
so
small
it was
one.
Like a smaller, more like a live press release,
right?
Like
yeah.
a press conference or something. But yeah, they will probably do. And now they have Apple Park. They have the Steve Jobs Theater. And it can be a smaller event. It doesn't have to be as big as the iPhone event.
Yeah, and I think they really want to get their mileage out of that awesome theater, right?
Yeah.
Johnny Ive, he spent his, you know, he spent probably years designing those beautiful curves and everything, right?
Yeah, so the lathering on the entrance.
Yeah, they want to use that for as much as possible.
Yeah,
so
it's... I think it's very likely that we'll see an October event with new Macs and with the new iPads, which we know is coming.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense as well. And it kind of also shows Apple kind of... Because before, the iPads were always bundled together with the iPhones. And it makes sense because they both run iOS. But people use iPads in very, very different ways than they use a phone. And bundling it together with a Mac, especially as the both of them are like, you know, really... kind of coming together and moving towards each other with Marzipan and all these things, I think it makes sense to do a more like pro-focused event, if you will, with iPads and Macs, like focusing on some of these more powerful use cases, maybe showing some of the stuff that people might have been building with Marzipan, maybe giving an update about that. I think that makes total sense and would be really cool to see.
Yeah, we've had the March event, which was the education/consumer-focused iPad event. So the consumer iPad for this year has already been announced, and we just need the Pro iPad, which is a Pro machine. So I guess it makes sense to bundle them with the Mac.
Yeah.
And Apple does events in March, June, September, and October. So if they don't do an October event, it would be in March, and then they lose all of the holiday sales. So I guess it makes sense for them to do in October.
Yeah, I agree. All right, what do you say? Should we take a look at our poker results?
Yeah, just before we go to that, take a last look at the hashtag if you still want to send a question.
All right. So here we go, our poker results for our iPhone keynote poker game. So what we did on the last episode was that we made a poker game where we bet on the things we thought would show up or wouldn't show up at this keynote. And we bet some points on it and we had a little bit back and forth. And now we're going to see how we did. So these were our bets. We had bets about whether there would be a low-cost iPhone, Face ID 2.0, and things like that. And for those of you who are here, you can now see the green ones were the ones that we actually correctly betted. So we got things like the low-cost iPhone. We both got that bet right. The iPhone had a dual SIM card option, so there we go. Rambo, you didn't think we would see AirPods 2. I did, but you betted against that, so you won that point. The fact that the largest iPhone XS will not be called Plus, that one was something we correctly guessed as well.
Well, it wasn't really a guess.
It wasn't really a guess, right?
it was trusting the source.
This is the thing with me playing poker against Rambo. He knows all these things, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of tricky for me to win. We betted that the current iPhone 10 will no longer be sold, and that is true. Also that the Apple Watch LTE will be available in significantly more countries. We had a little bit of a debate whether I actually would win that point, but you did admit that since it's a double amount, it counts as significant
amount. Well, actually, let's tell the truth. You said, I think I lost because I said
I did,
it would
yeah.
be available in all countries where Apple Watch is sold. But then I told you, well, you said significantly and it's twice as many countries. So yeah, it is significant. So I gave it to him.
Oh, yeah. He's such a nice guy, you know,
yeah.
such a gentleman. The Apple video service was not announced. We got an iOS 12 recap, but there was no group FaceTime mentioned, which kind of makes sense because they have delayed it. And it seems like whenever Apple delays a product, it's just like it doesn't exist. It's like you never heard about this.
Yeah, but I guess it's a smaller delay. So I really thought they would. Tim Cook would say, like, and we are shipping group FaceTime later this year or beginning next year. So, yeah, I thought they would mention it.
Yeah. We got an onstage game demo, which was pretty cool. I always enjoy those. I know those are very polarizing. Some people see it as the bathroom break. I get really excited. It's like, oh my God, it's new version of Elder Scrolls. Super cool. The iPhone XS did not have a significantly better camera. This is something I betted on, you didn't. And that's because I thought that the only differentiator between the two phones, which turned out to be true, is the size.
And I changed my mind about that.
You did change your mind.
Half an hour after we did the recording, I started thinking about the name and I thought, oh, maybe the plus means it has more stuff.
Yeah.
And the max means it's just bigger. And it actually was that.
We bet it that the Mac won't be mentioned at all, which it was, so we lost those. The iPhone did not get Apple Pencil support. The new iPhone models, we guessed slightly wrong there on the price. The AirPower, we bet it will cost $300, but it doesn't cost anything because it doesn't exist. And new AirPods charging case was not shown. We got an on-stage AR demo, like always. And finally, no new iPads are shown. So we got a couple of things wrong as well. I get 50-50 chance. And so let's take a look at the final results. So just to kind of show you, the maximum points that we can get is 100. Because we betted up to 5 points on each item. We had 10 each. That was 20 items. So that is a maximum of 100 points. And let's take a look at the final results. So first up, Mr. Rambo, he got, out of 100 points, he got -4. Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
There were a couple of wild bets there, a couple of wild cards, a little bit of wish casting, so... Yeah, it's always hard to predict.
It's all AirPower's fault.
All AirPower's fault. We were so sure about it, but yeah. And let's see what I got. So Rambo got -4, and I got +4. Oh, yeah. He's not happy about that.
So I guess I just walk away now, right?
I guess.
I delete my Twitter. I resign from 9to5 Mac.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I can do all of that stuff, so I think you should keep doing it. All right, so now we want to answer some of your questions, and we're going to start with one from our good friend Benedikt Tehechte, and he asks, do you think that the popular theory that Apple dropped AirPower out of spite for you is true?
Maybe. They certainly know I love it. Yeah, but yeah, not really, but it's funny that like the product I'm so excited about, they just ignore it.
Yeah. So next question here comes from Bruno Muis, and he wants to know if we think that the Apple glasses are coming soon. Do we think that AR is going to evolve for real?
It depends on your definition of soon, but I guess we can say that. I think Mark Gurman said 2022, something like that.
Yeah.
So it is fairly soon. And yeah, I do believe in it. We talked about this. We still have to do our AR special when we're going to talk in depth about AR. But I feel like Apple's focus on AR is preparing the landscape for a product dedicated to AR. And most of the AR demos I see people do, they are really cool, but they don't make any sense on a phone or an iPad. Like the one I like to use as an example was one where you would point your camera at a credit card and you would like show your balance right there over the credit card. And like, if I'm going to pick up my phone, then I might as well just open the credit card app. Like, the only difference is it's cool. But if I'm wearing glasses and I can just look at my credit card and see its balance, that's like a whole other thing. Like, it's really awesome. And it actually helps me in a way that my phone doesn't.
Yeah, I think the whole ARKit story right now is just the beginning. I think that Apple is doing kind of the reverse of what they've been doing with some other platforms like the Watch and tvOS. I think part of it might be also that they haven't seen the results that they wanted from the Apple TV and from the Apple Watch like store and the apps, and that they're now trying to build out the platform first. So it makes a ton of sense that they're building like this really powerful AR kit, and kind of like what we talked about with the Watch, the fact that since so much is done by the platform itself, they are free to iterate on it, and they can even introduce new form factors, and maybe things would not just work day one, but for example, if you already built like an AR-powered game or AR-powered app for ARKit for the iPhone, porting it to the Apple glasses, eyeglasses, maybe, would probably be, you know, quite easy, or at least a lot less effort than if it was like, here's this brand new platform, this brand new AR kit that no one's ever heard about before. Now it's going to be something people know about. You know, it's been around. You know, there's lots of WWDC sessions and documentation and tutorials. I think they're kind of setting these things up as a much, much bigger kind of guarantee for success when it comes out, because launching a new platform is always really hard, even if you're Apple. It's not guaranteed that developers will be excited about this. We know like how many
see
people
see Apple Watch and
yeah,
iMessage
see Apple Watch
apps.
And Apple TV. You know, most people don't develop apps for those platforms, and I think ARKit might be just a reaction to that and kind of laying the groundwork for what's to come.
Yeah, I agree. I do think they are going to release that.
All right. So we're going to switch gears now a little bit and take this question from Vojta Stavik. And this is a good question. Was there ever any direct communication between Apple and you, Rambo? And did they give you some job offer or maybe some threats?
Not threats, but job offers, yes.
All right.
And I'm not interested.
And how come?
Well, I have all of these cool things I do. And if I worked at Apple, I wouldn't be able to do any of it. So I don't want to work that. It's simple.
Simple as that. All right. So we're going to take one final question, and then we're going to head off to the winery, which I'm really, really looking forward to. And this one, I'm going to have a little bit hard pronouncing the name, so apologies. And this is from Principeroxido. Probably, maybe I got that right. We will see. And the question is, does iOS now need tutorials for features that the device has? So there's a lot of features that are kind of hidden, like 3D Touch or Apple Pay and things like that. Do you think that Apple would need like some better tutorials, like introducing these features to the end user?
For Apple Watch?
No, for the iOS devices in general. Like, for example, the fact that 3D Touch exists is something that when you show people, they go like, whoa, I had no idea most of the time. So do you think that Apple needs to implement more kind of tutorials to show some of these features?
I don't think they need to, and it's not a very Apple thing to do. Like, they have always been a company that makes products that shouldn't require a manual. And in fact, they don't even ship a manual. They ship like just a quick getting started guide. I guess, I don't think so. If it was another company like Google, they would probably do that. But they do highlight features now because they have basically been forced to add onboarding screens to everything, not just apps, but even like individual features because of GDPR and other laws going up in other countries. So I think they are taking advantage of the fact that they now basically are required to add onboarding screens, and they are using that to highlight new features. I've even seen that on my Apple TV on one of the betas. It showed me like a what's new screen. There's actually an app, a hidden app on Apple TV called What's New.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Just
appropriately named.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, like, so I do some game development in my spare time, and I really like to be sometimes inspired by game development for app development as well. And you know, in general, kind of information architecture and how you reveal information. Because in many games these days, you have a lot of abilities, you have a lot of controls, you have a lot of things going on. Like, games are kind of complicated. And there's this thing in game design where you want to kind of gradually reveal these things to the user, or to the player in this case. But you also want always a reason for the player to use these features.
It's progressive disclosure.
Progressive disclosure. There you go. And one classic way to do that, let's say you get like a high jump ability so you can jump higher. You will trap the player in some kind of pits where they get that ability, and then you have to jump out. Like, you have to actually use the high jump ability to get out of that place. So the player is like naturally learning about these things. And where I'm going with this analogy is Apple could kind of maybe do something similar with iOS, where they could have some features or some part of the setup process that would require you to use something like 3D Touch or something like that, or maybe demonstrate it in a more natural way. And
I remember they did that for the trackpad when they reversed the scrolling.
Right, exactly.
You had to scroll down to find the button to dismiss
exactly.
it. And there is something, maybe there isn't anymore, but I think when they introduced the haptic home button, you had to click the button and you had to actually click it to go forward. So they wanted you to feel how it felt and adjust the level of feedback. So yeah, they've done that in the past. So yeah, it would make sense, like, hey, we have this cool feature, it's called 3D Touch. So press harder on this to actually... I had a friend of mine, which is not familiar with iOS. He had never used an iPhone before. And he was looking at my Apple Music playlists. And he wanted to like add some music that he recommended to a playlist of mine. And I tried to explain to him, like, just press harder and it's going to offer you the option. He couldn't do it. It took a couple of attempts. So I guess it is something that people need to get used to.
Yeah, and it's something that they could, again, gradually disclose and they could show it later maybe. But at the same time, when you're opening your phone, you don't want to get a tutorial, right? You want to get stuff done. So it can also be a bit risky. But, you know, this is something that they perhaps could design a little bit better in terms of as they are adding these more complex features. But the best is, of course, when the feature kind of speaks to itself, right? And like an emoji where they don't have to show a tutorial because it's all over the internet, or it used to be when it came out. So people kind of... we're aware of it that way.
You could say that the camera and flashlight buttons on the home screen, which will be, I don't know if they'll add it to the XR, I guess, so then you can just press longer. But you can say they are kind of like tutorials for 3D Touch, because if you just tap them, they grow a little bit, and I think it's natural for people when they tap something and it doesn't work, they tap harder.
Right.
Like the remote control and it doesn't work and the batteries are weak, you press harder, which doesn't make any difference, but people do it.
Or then you go and mash the TV.
Yeah.
Right? Come on.
Yeah, so I guess they work as kind of a tutorial for 3D Touch.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, it's time to wrap up this live show. So if you want to follow us along after this and after hearing this episode, you can find us on Twitter. I am at John Sundell and Rambo is at _inside. You can also find our show and all the show notes for this episode and all the other ones we do at stacktracepodcast.fm. And we want to thank Luis for putting this together, for enabling us to do this live show. We want to thank you, all of you, listening to us and being here in this room with us today. This was so much fun to do, and we hope we can do it again in the future. So all that remains is to say adios, Mr. Rambo.
Adios.
All right, thanks.